She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. We are rolling into hour two here on this Friday after Thanksgiving. I always love the Friday after Thanksgiving, especially at work. It's casual, can have a fun show. And there's a segment that I have been thinking about for a few months now. I actually threw it out on Twitter a few months ago and people seemed to really like it, but I never really got around to putting it together because I didn't know if I was going to be able to use it enough. And I think I'm 1,000% sure that we will be using this a lot. The concept of this is that we have a lot of Marie Antoinettes right now in our society. And obviously the biggest one is Nancy Pelosi. She, instead of saying, let them eat cake, she said, let them eat ice cream. Her Jenny's $12 a pint ice cream. She went on James Corden and showed off her fancy freezers. And then she got a haircut when all the salons were closed and blamed the hairstylist. I mean, this woman really would make Marie Antoinette blush with how obnoxious she is. But the out of touchness of our elite feels like it's at an all-time high. And when Joe Biden goes to Nantucket to stay at a billionaire's home, when Kamala Harris is buying $375 pots in France, and the rest of us are being told that, hey, it's just a dollar more for turkey. Calm down. It's not that big a deal, okay? It feels as though there's so many examples of this kind of snobbish, elitist behavior. And there's a really funny example of one today. So without further ado, I don't know what we're going to call this. I will take ideas. If you want to text in 63566, start the text with the word curly. If you have an idea for a name for this segment, we are open to it. But here's the sound to accompany it.
I mean, it's one banana, Michael. What could it cost? $10?
And it's like when I had this garden party for my father's birthday, right? I said RSVP because it was a sit-down dinner. But people came that, like, did not RSVP.
Let them eat cake.
There's no one who's more unaware of what normal people go through than the people in Hollywood. They are on cloud nine. They have no idea what's going on. And someone who really exemplifies this kind of snobbish behavior is Seth Rogen. He's an actor. A lot of you probably aren't aware of his films, but he was in a couple of good ones back in the day. He was in Superbad. He was in Pineapple Express.
40-Year-Old Virgin.
There were some funny ones. Yeah. Since then, I haven't seen him in anything funny in quite some time. But he's very active on Twitter. And so there was a YouTuber who tweeted out that he lives in LA and his car got broken into, he got robbed, and he was complaining about it because, you know, it kind of stinks to have your stuff stolen and to feel violated in that way. And he was criticizing the city and the crime that's happening in Los Angeles. And what Seth Rogen tweeted back is possibly the most privileged, out of touch thing I've ever heard in my life. Okay, ready? He says, dude, he has that voice, that deep. Can you do a Seth Rogen? Jared's really.
Dude.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
As close as I can get.
He said, dude, I've lived here for 20 years. You're nuts. Ha ha. It's lovely here. Don't leave anything valuable in it. It's called living in a big city. And it gets worse. So not only is he gaslighting this guy, like, why are you so upset? Oh, you're upset that your car got broken into. Oh, what do you like your stuff? Oh, what do you value your things that you bought with the money that you earned from working? You little peasant. You care about valuables that belong to you? So
I'm
silly.
We're going to financially recover from this.
So this person and his name, the YouTuber, is Casey Neistat. And he basically wrote back and said, hey, I feel violated, and asked, you know, why can't he be upset about this situation? Rogan makes it even worse. Like, he, at no point does he think, oh yeah, maybe I don't really understand it because I have millions of dollars and it wouldn't matter to me if my car got broken into. No, he doubles and triples and quadruples down. Like, at no point At no point in this Twitter back and forth does he have any self-reflection and say, am I going to come off like a jerk for writing these things? No. This guy is unrelenting in his snobbishness. He says, you can be mad, but I guess I don't personally view my car as an extension of myself, and I've never felt violated any of the 15 or so times that my car was broken into. And then he's a comedian, so he has to be funny. You know, he has to make jokes, haha. So he writes, once a guy accidentally left a cool knife in my car, so if it keeps happening, you might get a little treat.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you, I make you laugh.
Your car got broken into? That's so cute. That's so funny. And oh my gosh, you're worried about it? You care?
And how many times did Pineapple Express say his car was broken into? Six?
Jared, 15.
15? Okay, Seth Rogen's car was broken into 15 times.
And we're just finding out about it now.
In his Hollywood gated community, I believe that. They're just like us.
Celebrities, stars, they're just like us. But it's just the idea that that's somehow virtuous, that he doesn't care if his car gets broken into. It's not virtuous. You just have tons of money. You just have no understanding of what things cost and what it means to like value something, obviously.
Meanwhile, this, you know, oh, your car got broken into, boo hoo. Okay, well, how many fits has he pitched over probably getting not being allowed to go into a restaurant with a table or whatever real problems, quote unquote, the snobbery of the elite deals with?
Well, it's also downplaying what's happening in
LA.
He had
to eat red caviar one time when he wanted black caviar, Grace.
I mean, but it also just shows you that this gaslighting of people who live in cities and telling them this is what it means to live in a big city. We're actually having a very special guest on in the next coming segments, and she's lived in a big city for most of her life. And I just don't think that people buy into that. You know, when people are afraid, you're not going to convince them that this is what you get. Like this is what it, you know, you wanted to live in the big city, so now your car needs to get broken into and you have to be happy about it and laugh. That no one's going to buy into that because it's gotten significantly worse and you're not going to convince people it hasn't. Seth Rogen, I'm going to venture to say, lives in probably a very nice area. I don't think he's thinking about the common man who lives in LA. And this whole idea that you shouldn't be upset about it. I my favorite line is, I don't personally view my car as an extension of myself. Oh, good for you. Good for you, Seth. You're so awesome.
Yeah, well, whenever you're sitting in one of your 10 rooms in your mansion or your whatever other belongings you consider extensions of yourselves, real people have things they worry about, like cars that they need, A, to use, B, that you don't want to feel like you're violated in this space.
What about when he says, you're nuts, haha, it's lovely here. I want to know, if you live in LA, call up, is it lovely? Is it lovely there? If you live, yes, in a big city, is it lovely?
Venice Beach, Santa Monica Beach, call us and let us know about when Skid Row found their way out there when they extended the expo line.
Right, I mean, and some of the people commenting back to this had such great points. Someone said, I wish I could live such a carefree existence. And another person wrote, imagine not being rich and someone breaking into your car. Then imagine celebrities saying it's not a big deal. One detractor, meanwhile, called Seth Rogen, who is worth roughly $80 million, the whitest privileged dude, for his unsolicited take. And another person wrote, not as much fun. Oh, so then, you know, Seth Rogen does this thing where he'll direct message people. If you criticize him, he direct messages you, kind of like in a Jim Acosta, Jake Tapper way. And he'll like threaten you or tell you to go bleep yourself. And he just seems like a really charming guy, I guess, is the point of this segment. Adam, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Adam.
Grace, thank you. I just saw, isn't the New York Times on the left of the column here politically? I think they are, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, the reason I say that is because I saw something, an opinion from the New York Times. It's on YouTube. And it's unbelievable. It's basically, you know, the liberals all say, oh, we want to do, you know, housing for the poor and everything else. Well, it just shows you mathematically, this is the New York Times saying they don't want it. Not in my backyard. Nobody wants it. And I think that is the hypocrisy. Look at Nancy Pelosi moving from San Francisco to Florida in a new $35 million mansion. I mean, she screwed up California pretty good, or at least San Francisco. It looks like a trash dump now. And they're just hypocrites. And this piece from the New York Times, which I saw on YouTube, is absolutely personifies that. It just shows you how hypocritical they really are.
Yeah, no, and Adam, you just nailed it with not in my backyard. I mean, that is the mentality of the left. Oh, yeah, we'll have solar, we'll have wind farms. Just don't put them in my backyard because I don't want to block my beautiful view. You know, everybody else can do it. We'll go to the climate conference and we'll all take our private jets so we can tell regular people that they should kayak from one place to the other if they want to go on vacation. It's completely bogus. And I'm glad I did this segment, and here's why. These examples come up once a day, and it always, I understand that you make a lot of money, you're a big celebrity, you lose touch with the average person. All right, you know what everyone should do today if you want to give yourself a little treat on this Friday after Thanksgiving? YouTube Ricky Gervais Golden Globes monologues, because he nailed those celebrities in that, and he perfectly described them all, congratulating themselves, $1 million, you know, fighting for equal pay. They make $50 million per movie. He really encapsulates what's wrong with all of those people in Hollywood. But I get that. I get that you get disconnected. But can't you at least pretend? It's like they're bragging about how out of touch they are. They're rubbing it in our faces.
Yeah, it's never good box office to pick a fight with a guy whose car was just robbed. Like, that's what he did.
You know what the nuttiest thing, though, is, Jared, in this interaction? He thinks that he's the better person for what he's saying. I wouldn't care if my car got broken into, unlike you clearly selfish, Trump-supporting piece of crap. You're so materialistic, you and your car.
I think what we really need is Gal Gadot starting off a chorus of Imagine.
Forget Stat. Gal Gadot. You've got Grace Curley. Imagine all the people. How was that?
That was on point.
And what we do is we'll get 50 people to sing it with us, all in different keys, all in different pitches, and we'll put it all together. And then that will fix the pandemic. Actually, it fixed the pandemic 2 years ago, which is weird that we're still in this situation. Ronnie, really quick, go ahead. You're next with Grace.
Hey, Grace, you are so on top of it with this discussion today because it's so true. Like, these elites really believe that all these consequences are for other people. And what you're seeing now is that these leftist mobs are beginning to specifically target wealthy neighborhoods where people like Seth Rogen live, because they know that those neighborhoods are full of cowards like Seth Rogen. They're unarmed and their houses are full of awesome stuff. And if you try pulling that crap in the suburbs, there's a gun around every tree.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. So they're going to know. They're definitely going to know.
And there's been a lot of celebrities who have been held up at gunpoint to get all their stuff. I remember Kim Kardashian, I believe that was in Paris, and recently a Real Housewife that happened to her. And I'm sure it changes their perspective. It's awful that that happens to them. But I'm sure that they have a different view of crime and of danger when it's face to face. But Seth Rogen is in La La Land in more ways than one. Thanks to Joe Biden, winter heating bills are expected to soar as much as 54% in some areas, depending on your heating source, and that may be an optimistic scenario. One of our clients called the mailroom manager last week and said his heating bill has already doubled, and we're not even into the thick of it yet with wintertime. Until this Sunday, you can save $20 on the Gen 40 heater. The Gen 40 heater has combined both infrared and convective heating systems into one heater. Jared, I know you love the Gen 40 heater because of how well it works, but also because it's been saving you a couple bucks.
Yeah, well, so what I do now is I keep my oil heat that I have just enough to pretty much keep the pipes from freezing, and then whatever room I'm in the house, we put the Gen 40 heater there, and we just move it from room to room because it's portable, it's light, it doesn't get hot, it doesn't blast you. It's not like one of those old space heaters that looks like a grill. It's just open in the middle of the room.
No, it's very sleek looking.
Yeah, it's got a nice like wood paneling. It's pretty nice. It's like very mid-century.
Yes.
Which is kind of my wheelhouse.
Don't wait for your first huge heating bill. Do what Jared did. These heaters will sell out. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Use code GRACEHEATER. That's code GRACEHEATER to save $20 and also get free shipping. That's EdenPureDeals.com, code word GRACEHEATER. I'm going to give it one more time because I do think these are going to sell out pretty quick. Go to EdenPureDeals.com, code word GRACEHEATER. We'll be right back with a very special guest, so don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
She's a master at pouncing, weaponizing, and seizing.
To give you a reference point, I'm somewhere between a snake and a mongoose. And a panther.
She's Grace Curley.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm so excited. I have this like little community on Twitter of blue check marks who aren't Seth Rogen, who aren't crazy people. And I'm always talking to them. I'm always inspired by the things they write. And I've never had anyone in the studio with me. Libby Emmons, everyone on the show is very familiar with Libby. She writes for the Post Millennial, for the Federalist. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a lot of fun.
Now, Libby, I want to start. You have so many stories out right now. You never take a break. That was why I first thought of you, because it's the day after Thanksgiving. Everyone's kind of laying low, and Libby's just tweeting out all of these different stories. Let's start with Rittenhouse. You were following mm-hmm. this more closely than I know I was. You watched the entire trial, and I was very impressed with the judge in this case.
I was too, actually. I thought that he was remarkably fair. Open-minded. I thought it was interesting to watch his process. And because it was a jury trial, what he was really there to do was to make sure that the law was followed in the courtroom and that the jury understood the law and their responsibility. And I thought he did a really good job of that.
Yeah. And I thought that the moment I found most interesting was when the prosecution was trying to give the impression to the jury that Rittenhouse did something wrong by not speaking and, you know, by using his Fifth Amendment and staying silent. And the judge was really blown away by that. He was looking at the guy like in awe. I can't mm-hmm. believe you would even go down this road. It really showed you, I don't know if the prosecution was amateurish or if they really didn't know what they were doing or they thought it was going to work. What was your take on that?
I thought the prosecution had to pull out anything they possibly could because they really didn't have a chance. The video evidence was so clear. And it looked pretty clear even a year ago, right, that Rittenhouse had acted in self-defense. I talked to an eyewitness who was there who testified at the trial, Drew Hernandez, who was telling me that he had seen Rittenhouse actually diffuse situations on the ground before they turned violent as well between Black Lives Matter protesters and, you know, people protecting businesses, that there were Black people in the crowd. And that wasn't an issue for Rittenhouse at all. You know, he was just like, what kind of white supremacist is this that, you know, doesn't go around being a crazy person?
Yeah,
know?
Right.
So I thought that was really, I thought that was interesting. I think Binger, the assistant district attorney who was prosecuting the case, really had to pull for stuff. But bringing up somebody's right to remain silent and using that silence against them is exactly anathema to the right itself. And Judge Schroeder was right to refuse to allow that line of questioning.
Now, that's how we feel about this judge. But some people who are wiser than us and smarter than us in Hollywood feel very differently.
Hollywood celebrities.
They know everything.
They're so smart.
They don't care if their cars get broken into. It's really amazing. I want to be just like them someday. Tell us what happened quickly here, because we don't have a ton of time, with Star Trek's Will Wheaton.
Okay, so full disclosure, I love Star Trek. I'm a huge Star Trek fan.
Oh my gosh, I'm outnumbered today.
I've been recently doing a rewatch of Next Generation. Will Wheaton is so annoying all through the series, right? I kind of had a crush on him when I was little, but like,
oh gosh,
what a dork. You know, he's just the worst. He's always whining about everything. And, you know, we had the headline, Shut Up, Wesley, which is, I'm pretty sure, like the first episode that we see Will Wheaton interact with Jean-Luc Picard, and he's on the bridge, whatever. Anyways, so he was on Facebook and he was complaining about the judge, saying that the judge was this racist person. Now, the judge was not the decider in this trial.
No.
The jury was the decider. The judge was there to guide the jury. The judge thought very highly of the jury and consistently said to the jury, you know, like, I'm impressed with you guys, which I thought was great, you know, to see that.
Unfortunately, Star Trek's Will Wheaton disagrees. We're going to get into Libby's crush on this Star Trek character when we return, and we have a lot more to get to. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Sir, I know this may finish me as an acting ensign, but...
Shut up, Wesley!
All right, so my producer Jared and Libby Emmons are having the best time right now because they're geeking out over Star Trek. I just have to say, though, this is a great day because I came in this morning, I'm coming up with all these ideas, and I'm like, I'm going to try to get a guest on, but no one's going to want to do this Friday after Thanksgiving. And so I text Libby, and she's like, yeah, I can come in person, and I'm blown away. And this is so cool. I feel like it's a real radio show. But let's get back to the Star Trek. You set this up for us. This man, Will Wheaton, I've never heard of him. You and Jared seem to know his work. And he wanted to weigh in on this judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse right. case.
And he did. So he went on Facebook and he said that Judge Bruce Schroeder was this racist judge, this horrible individual. One of his followers snapped back and said, you know, actually, don't you think that there were circumstances in the case that showed that Rittenhouse wasn't a white supremacist, domestic terrorist vigilante? There are all of these examples, citing his deep ties to the community, that he was scrubbing graffiti off of a local school, that he was actually acting in self-defense. And Wheaton said, no, that's all conservative propaganda. None of that is true. And so it's clear that he was weighing in on this trial without having watched it and without having read any of the testimony. Even one of the men that Rittenhouse shot, Gage Grosskreutz, testified that he was advancing on Rittenhouse with his own gun drawn before shot.
I'm sure he had a license for this gun, right?
He actually did not.
What?
It had expired, it turns out. So he also was not, he was not legally carrying the gun. And Rittenhouse was carrying a gun that was legal because of the certain rules in Wisconsin as regards barrel length. So that charge was thrown out at trial.
It's interesting that you say, you know, he wasn't watching the trial, because we have a lot of that in this country right now where people are weighing in. And I'm glad you bring this up, because another case came to a close, I believe it was Wednesday, with Ahmaud Arbery, and that was a huge story. And I remember when it broke on the TV, I was mad at myself all yesterday. Well, not all yesterday, but when I was thinking about how I reported on it, I'm like, oh, I wish I had said more. I wish I had given them more of my opinion on it. But I was careful because I hadn't really been watching it that closely. And now that we have this discussion, I'm realizing that's probably the smarter way to handle these things. If you don't watch the trial fully, you might want to take a minute. And I did. And since then, and since what I've looked into and what I've seen, I'm extremely happy with the verdict they came to. It seemed like those three men were acting erratically, and it was a very strange case. And I wanted to play for you, Libby, the father of this victim, Marcus Arbery. He said something, I think it was yesterday, that it at least it started circulating. Let's play this sound. We'll have Libby react.
For real, all life matter.
All life.
Yes. Not just black children. We don't want to see nobody go through this.
No,
I don't want to see no daddy watch a kid get left and shot down like that.
That's right, Ma.
So it's all our problem. It's all our problem. So, hey, let's keep fighting. Let's keep doing it and making this place a better place for all human beings.
Amen.
All human beings.
Amen.
Everybody.
I'm talking about.
Love everybody.
Love everybody.
All human beings need to be treated equally.
Yeah.
I can't help but hear in that man's voice the shattering grief that he must be feeling at the loss of his son. It's not even 2 years since he was killed. I think a verdict like this, where the three men who chased this man down in their neighborhood for whatever reason they thought they were entitled to do so, which clearly the jury said was garbage, you can't do that. You can't chase a man down in your neighborhood and shoot them just because you don't. I don't know how they justified this in their own minds. It doesn't seem like there's a reasonable justification even remotely for doing such a thing. And Mr. Arbery's courage at coming out and saying that and expressing these sentiments, you know, that's something that we could all learn from.
Absolutely. And I think that the fact that he said all lives matter, which you're not really supposed to say anymore, according to the left, it's not politically correct. I think at a time when he could have really divided people even more, and he got up there and instead he really spoke to something that everyone should agree with, which is no parent should ever have to go through that.
No.
And that's such a unifying message that you don't hear when these horrible things happen. You hear about how, you know, we're all so different and the systems are also racist, but you don't hear about the grief of a parent, which for a lot of people is a lot more moving than the rest of this.
Right. And I think we heard that as well with George Floyd's mom spoke out against. She said, you know, please don't burn these things down. Was it George Floyd's mom? I don't think it was. There's been so many of these incidents. I think it was actually Jacob Blake's mom who said, please don't burn down, you know, more of Wisconsin over this, over her son having been shot and paralyzed. And we see that also there have been a lot of moms who have been who have spoken out and said, you know, my son was killed. My daughter was killed. Tamir Rice's family. I mean, he was a young man who was killed in a park in Chicago. He was playing with a toy gun and police pulled up and shot him. I can't imagine this kind of, as a parent myself, I mean, this kind of grief is debilitating. I don't know how these parents then are able to get up and say, you know, please stop the violence or say anything. It's a,
right.
You know, could you, I can't even possibly imagine what they're going through. It's so heartbreaking. But yeah, I think that we do have issues in this country. We have issues and it's not a racial issue. You know, police violence against people happens a lot. It happens a lot more than is reported, whether the people are armed or unarmed or black or white. More of us should be standing up and saying that, yes, that all of our lives, all of Americans' lives are important and we deserve to be able to exist in this country without that kind of violence against us. And it's not just police violence, but there's violence in communities all over the place. Domestic violence is still a huge issue. You know, there's all of this.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Speaking of, you know, violence, because this is not one of your stories, Libby, but I saw a story today and I was really in shock by it because it sounded like it couldn't even be real. It was a mother and she was going to light candles at her son's memorial. And it says mother murdered during memorial for son in Chicago. So she's lighting candles and her son was actually killed due to gun violence. And then while she's at his memorial service, she's killed.
That's a horrifying story.
It's just really the violence, the crime, and all that the left is telling us is that we're overreacting to this. You know, this crime right. doesn't really exist. It's in our minds.
Well, we're supposed to only care about some kinds of violence and crime. The crime rates in Chicago are skyrocketing. Crime rates in New York. There was a man shot near Penn Station, I think I read on Twitter this morning. We're not supposed to care about that crime. We're only supposed to care about some crime.
I'm glad you brought up New York because I have a lot to ask you. First of all, there's a story that you wrote in the Post Millennial. Anyone who wants to check out Libby's work, go to thepostmillennial.com. They always, what I love about the Post Millennial is that you guys are constantly updating your site and you have a lot of those weird woke stories mm-hmm. that you see on Twitter and you go, this can't be real. And then you see all the story and you guys have all the details on it. It's a really great site. But you have a story about how non-citizens are likely to gain voting rights in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I want to get to New York City. But before we get to the voting,
okay,
I saw a video the other day. And it's this woman. I think I saw it on Libs of TikTok. But they weren't making fun of the woman.
They're amazing, Libs of TikTok.
Amazing. They deserve all the awards. And this woman's in the subway. And she's by like a pole, like a column or something. Mm-hmm. And she says, this is what I do now when I'm in the subway. And she takes like a bike lock. And she wraps it around the pole and then she wraps it around her waist and she locks it. Uh-huh. And she said, so I don't get pushed into the tracks. And I thought, that's insane. And then I'm reading the comments of people who live in New York City mm-hmm. and they're saying, this is a very reasonable thing to do.
Was she on the platform or she was on the platform?
Platform.
Yeah, you got to be careful on the platform. I got to say, like, I'm super dodgy on the platform. Like, I put my back against one of those. There's like big sort of eye bars. And I put my back against an eye bar on the platform side. And I try not to stand in a way where it would be easy to push me into the tracks.
But what's happening? That needs to be the case. That sounds crazy to me.
It's not great. I was on the subway a couple months ago and I haven't been on the subway that much lately. At one point I got COVID, yes, I'm vaccinated, I was on the subway and it stopped in the tunnel and there was this crazy stabby man running through the tunnels with a knife trying to get on the subway. And literally there were 15 cops running through the subway itself asking us passengers which way did he go, like it was some kind of cartoon. And I was just like, what is this? And then some guy with a southern accent and, you know, very nicely dressed, nice pointy shoes and everything, he pulls out a bottle of Jack Daniels and starts offering it around, you know, anybody like a drink like this, you know. And I'm like, what is even going on? The guy, the stabby guy, is trying to get on the subway. He's trying to push on. So at a certain point, other people are trying to, some guy is like blocking the door so that no one can get out on the subway, and he's actually blocking the cops from getting through.
Oh, God.
They come through, they start screaming at the guy, you know? Oh, my goodness. But yeah, if you don't want to get pushed onto the tracks, you should be very careful.
You know what Seth Rogen would say to all this? He'd be like, Libby, that's so silly. It's
sometimes
lovely
you just
here.
Get pushed onto the tracks. What's the big deal?
I don't
beware
really,
the third rail.
I don't really consider that a bad thing. I'm very virtuous, Libby. All right, so let's get to the voting rights here. Non-citizens likely to gain voting mm-hmm. rights in New York City. I read this today. You talked about how people, if they're green card holders mm-hmm. or have working visas, they might be able to vote. Here's the part of the story that confused me.
Right.
Bill de Blasio seems like he knows this is going to be a problem.
He's not on board, but he's not going to veto it.
How does that make sense?
Well, he's at the end of his term as mayor. The incoming mayor seems to be in favor of it, although he's going to look into the legality of it. The only requirement is that you have to have been a resident of the city for 30 days. Non-citizens with, you know, papers to work, residents of the city for 30 days are going to get to weigh in on who's in city council and all of these other things. I don't think it's even remotely reasonable. I think that one of the benefits of citizenship should be that you get to vote. I think that's obvious. But yeah, Eric Adams is in favor. De Blasio is not in favor. He's not going to veto it. If he thinks that it's the will of the people, which I really don't know that it is the will of the people. I heard about this the other day. I tweeted out something like non-citizens should be non-voters. And people would be, a whole bunch of comments were like, they are non-voters. And I'm like, really? Are we sure? Because give it
now.
A minute.
Yeah.
And the other part of this story is that the people who are going to be responsible to make sure that the non-citizens who are voting vote only in the elections that they are allowed to vote in, and only for the candidate, for like the sections of ballots that they're allowed to vote on, are going to be the underpaid, poorly staffed poll workers who already don't really know that much. They get very limited training. It's a very part-time job. You know, I've shown up at New York City polling places and had to explain requirements to the polling people who are like asking for voter IDs from old ladies who are trying to vote. And I'm like, actually, in New York, you don't need a voter ID. You just need to sign your name.
And then someone pulled out some Jack Daniels and was like, have a sip.
Have it. Just
take it
out.
Easy, lady.
Just the city is falling apart. Would you just get drunk?
Well, you know what's funny is that you mentioned this. And if I remember correctly, when we were watching this mayoral race, I think it was the primaries, that there was mm-hmm. a huge issue with the voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
They had to.
Yeah.
They gave someone like an absurd amount of votes or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They put through a whole bunch of extra votes. They rolled out a whole new voting system, which is ranked voting. So you don't vote for one candidate. You vote for like 12 in some specific order. And that's that was the Democratic primary in June. And that pretty much decides the New York mayoral election. We had Curtis Sliwa running for the Republicans. Nobody's going to vote for a Republican mayor really in New York at
right.
this point, you know. So the June primary decided it. It was interesting, though, that Eric Adams was the most conservative Democrat running, and he took home the win on that one. A lot of people that I know were very disappointed that the far-left insane progressives didn't win, and I was like, why? Do you want us to just, like, all die in the subway tracks?
Yeah.
What are you looking for here?
How could it get any worse? That was the...
Well, I could tell you how it could get worse.
Oh, please do. I'm scared.
In addition to all of this, de Blasio now wants vaccine mandates for the subway. And he's imploring the stupid idiot governor, who's even worse than Cuomo, which, come on, right? He's imploring her to require this.
I wonder if she has a book in the works about inspired leadership. I feel like she might be able to sell 50,000 copies of that.
I do on occasion say, ciao, Bella.
We haven't even talked about him today. That's a whole nother thing. By the way, I do have a piece about Andrew Cuomo in Spectator. If you want to go to spectator.us, I basically wrote about the timing of this memoir
and how strange it was. He was actually in talks to write this 3 days before he put the mandate on shutting down non-essential businesses in New York. So he was way ahead of this. He saw this book coming, and he was able to fudge the numbers and save his book deal. It's all very interesting. You guys should check that out. Now, here's a question, Libby. Can you stay a little longer?
Yeah, sure.
All right, perfect. I think we might do a Dear Grace with Libby Emmons. We're going to get her advice this week. That's a little treat for all the listeners. More than ever, there are so many reasons to be a grateful nation. In large part, we have our military and our veterans to thank for our liberties and freedoms. National Wreaths Across America Day is Saturday, December 18th. You can join in the mission to remember our fallen heroes, honor those who currently serve and their families, and have the opportunity to teach younger generations the value of their freedoms. A $15 donation to Wreaths Across America sponsors a fresh, handmade balsam fir wreath from Maine with a single red bow. The veterans' wreaths have become a gift of America's respect. The circular wreath made with 10 balsam bouquets is a catalyst for unity, healing, and an expression of gratitude. What started with America's most hallowed ground at Arlington National Cemetery has grown to ceremonies at close to 3,000 participating locations across the country and overseas. Please sponsor a veterans wreath today and show your appreciation for our veterans. Go to wreathsacrossamerica.org. That's wreathsacrossamerica.org. Please donate now. We'll be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
But shut up, Wesley.
She's never held office, but she paid the whiskey priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
This is, the Listen Lady.
Yeah, well, listen, lady. I got so many problems, I don't even know where to begin here.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. We're going to do a quick Dear Grace with Libby Emmons. I'm very curious what kind of advice she's going to give out, because we have some problems today, some post-Thanksgiving problems. Here's the first entry. Dear Grace, we had Thanksgiving at my house this year. It was great. No politics except for one outburst of Let's Go Brandon, but my cousins were pretty chill about it. Here's the issue. My brother-in-law was having a glass of red wine and spilt it on my couch. I didn't freak out or anything. I have kids. I understand that mess is a part of life. But I was more thrown off about how okay he was with it. Like, he didn't fuss over it. He kind of just said sorry and laughed and said I could turn over the pillow if I was upset. Should I be mad? Should I ask him to pay to have it cleaned? Libby.
I don't know if you should be mad, but I wouldn't serve him red wine on your couch again. My goodness.
I've seen this happen before. People aren't nervous enough with red wine. Like, you have to be nervous.
You got
to
be careful. I'm not going to wear something white and then order red wine personally.
I don't trust myself that much. No, I agree. You should let it go. But
perhaps if that were me and he was that nonchalant about it, I would have said something like, why don't you come to the kitchen and I'll get you a bunch of stuff to clean that up with.
Yeah. There's definitely something missing with him.
I would have suggested that he fix it.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Next one. Dear Grace, my girlfriend and I have been together for 4.5 years. I love her a lot. I want to get her an engagement ring. Should I ask her friends what she likes or should I just ask her? I'd hate to get the wrong ring, but I feel like I'm ruining the surprise. Any advice?
I think he should go to the shop where he wants to buy it and talk to the salesperson and discuss what's within his budget, have a little selection, and then bring his girlfriend to come check out that selection.
That's a good idea. I also suggest looking at if she has, mom, aunts, sisters, see what their style is. Because a lot of times with wedding rings, girls kind of like what people in their family have. They go based off that.
But also 4.5 years, like, about time.
Yeah, no, seriously.
Step it up.
Now is the time, my friend. Really quickly here, we have time for one more. Dear Grace, I have zero motivation to work out. I ate like a pig yesterday to the point where I feel nauseous. I keep telling myself I'll start the next day, but I never do.
Well, you got to start then. I mean, suck it up.
Libby Emmons with the advice. This is no BS. All right, Libby Emmons is at Libby Emmons on Twitter. Thank you so much for coming
on
the show.
Thank you. This is fun.
I love having an in-studio guest. We're going to have to do this more often. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.